Brought to you by the Small Business Payments Alliance. According to a new survey, an overwhelming majority of small business owners oppose additional government regulations on the electronic payment system, as called for in the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. Don't let Durbin-Marshall pile new mandates on Main Street small businesses. Learn more at smallbusinesspaymentsalliance.com.
Michael Cohen may be the only person standing in between Donald Trump and jail. Three of Trump's four criminal trials, the ones in Washington, Florida, and Georgia, seem hopelessly stalled. But on Monday in New York, the hush money case is set to begin. And Cohen is the star witness in that case, the man who paid Stormy Daniels to keep quiet about her alleged affair with Donald Trump, who then reimbursed Cohen and, District Attorney Alvin Bragg says in his 34-count indictment, falsified records about those payments to conceal criminal activity. Got all that? Trump's defense is simple. You can't trust Michael Cohen. So what does Cohen have to say on the eve of the first criminal trial of a former president, someone who happens to be his one-time boss and mentor? A lot. I talked to Cohen on Thursday, just after he had learned that Donald Trump had attacked him on Truth Social, possibly violating the gag order in the case. Cohen discussed how he will defend the assault on his credibility at the trial, why Bragg's case is stronger than analysts believe, the legal tactics he's expecting from Trump's team, whether he ever regrets breaking with Trump. And he revealed what Stormy Daniels' tarot cards predict about the outcome of the case. I'm Ryan Lizza, and this is Playbook Deep Dive. I think there is some misunderstanding about this case, and I've heard you say that people are wrong when they say that this is the weakest of the four cases against Trump. Tell me if I've got that right.
No, actually.
Why do you think that? Well, no, what I mean is that you said that people are wrong about that. In other words, you don't believe this is the weakest case.
No, that's not what I said. What I've said consistently is that for whatever the reason might be, the American public treats these four indictments like it's the Kentucky Derby. Everybody's handicapping and picking and choosing which one is the most offensive and violative of law. I will concede right now that the January 6th insurrection is more grotesque in terms of illegal behavior than this specific case, campaign finance, hush money, we'll call it business record fraud. That's what I prefer to call it, the business record fraud case.
Rather than hush money. Okay.
Correct. The business record fraud is a crime. And if it was you, Ryan, or anybody else, any of your listeners, they would already have been indicted. The case would have already proceeded. And chances are they would have already been convicted and sentenced.
All right, Michael, Trump's defense is going to be to paint you as an untrustworthy witness. He's going to cite your guilty plea for lying to Congress and the fact that the Justice Department declined to offer you a cooperation deal because prosecutors thought you lied to them. And he'll say you're out for revenge and that you have a financial incentive to see him convicted. So how do you defend yourself from those accusations?
Right. And I will be for certain responding to that at the time of trial. But I wish that when people turn around and state that you lied to Congress, that you do me the courtesy, do yourself the courtesy of finishing the sentence. What is the sentence? That I had done that at the really for the benefit of Donald J. Trump. And that lie centered around the number of times that I had stated that I spoke to Donald about the Trump Tower, the failed Trump Tower Moscow real estate project, in conjunction with other lawyers, Jay Sekulow, Abby Lowell, Ty Cobb, with other individuals like Alan Garten or Ivanka and Jared. Everybody worked on that statement. I was just the fool who went ahead and read it into the record and submitted it. But what benefit did I have in terms of saying three times versus 10? That's the lie that I claim to have spoken to Donald three times about the failed Trump Tower Moscow real estate project when the true answer was 10.
Similarly, with these other accusations, is that the way you approach it? You put these things in context for the jury so that they understand them, and you know what sounds like a dramatic allegation can be defanged?
Absolutely. There is a ton of misinformation, disinformation, malinformation that has been put out there by Trump and acolytes literally since the Steele dossier. We all know that the Steele dossier was completely inaccurate as it related to me. I don't even talk about any of the other allegations raised in that garbage document.
I remember when we were all asking you if you went to, what country were you supposed
Prague, to Prague. Right. I've never been to the Czech Republic. I've never been to Prague.
You should go. Prague is beautiful, by the way.
By the way, I was, as soon as I had gotten out of Otisville, I was contemplating on going there and start taking photos and tweeting it out. Well, glad to be back in Prague, you know, simply to just, you know, stoke. Because I remember you and I spoke about that and you asked. In fact,
everyone was asking you.
I had even let people come and photograph my passport.
Passport. I remember that.
I've just never been there.
You've had quite a journey, Michael. All right. Credibility is one part of this trial. You've talked about that. The other C word that comes up is corroboration. And that's something that you and Lanny Davis, your advisor and I think former attorney, talk about a lot, that there will be corroboration. What can you tell us about that? Is this a stronger case when it comes to corroboration than people understand on the outside?
If it wasn't, I assure you and your listeners that Alvin Bragg and his team of prosecutors would never have brought this case.
Do you think we'll be surprised by some of the corroborating evidence?
I do.
Okay. In other words, we don't know everything that's going to be presented.
In fact, most people don't really know anything. They only know what the headlines have been. And as you know very, very well, headlines do not necessarily tell the story.
One of the big obstacles, Michael, seems to be how Bragg connects the misdemeanor of falsifying business records that recorded what were actually hush money payments, the payments to you to reimburse you for the payments to Stormy, to another crime that Trump was trying to commit, which then makes this a felony. If I've got that legal language correct, do you think Bragg has strong evidence on that portion of the case?
Let me say it to you this way. It may not be satisfying to you or to your listeners, and I do certainly appreciate the attempts to drill down, despite me telling you I cannot go into this case. Alvin Bragg would not have that as an element of this case if he did not believe that he would be able to prove this at trial to a jury of 12.
Michael, your case may end up being the only case that goes to trial this year, meaning that you are the key witness that will determine whether Donald Trump goes to jail before the 2024 election. What is it like having that sort of weight on your shoulders?
It's a heavy weight. It's a weight that is difficult on a daily basis to carry around. It is incredibly taxing on your heart, on your mind, and on your soul. I can tell you from a physical and a health standpoint, since this all started coming down, and I predicted early on, when everybody said, don't worry about it, I said, this is going to be the first case that is going to, I said it on my podcast, Mea Culpa. I said it on Political Beatdown. I've said it on television stations, on to journalists like yourself.
Why did you think that?
Why did I say that?
Yeah, well, why did you think that? Why did you believe that? I mean, obviously you had lots of insight into this case in a way that you didn't have insight into the other cases. But what made you think that, like, this is going to go first? Or was it the way that Bragg was dealing with it? Was it the way that the judge was dealing with it?
All things included. But when I was saying to you that health-wise, I'm down 22 pounds since the
You look
start.
Great, by the way. So
I look horrible. I'm down 22 pounds. I'm at the same weight now that I was at when I was released from the 51 days of solitary confinement as a result of an unconstitutional remand against me, weaponized by Bill Barr and Trump to go against his critics. So it's just a side note to those people who don't believe what Donald says, whether it's during these rallies or these ridiculous statements that he makes. Trust me, I've been there. I know what he's intending to do, and he's not bluffing.
Let me just be clear about this, because I think there's some people who think that solitary confinement is a form of torture and should be banned. And when you say solitary confinement, describe what you mean and what that was like.
So I was put into a cell that is approximately 8 feet by 10 feet. In it is a toilet, a sink, a locker, a bed, and a chair with a desk that's attached to the wall. And you sit there for 24 hours, 7 days a week. It's not like you see in Shawshank Redemption or any of those movies where you're out in the yard, you're able to, you know, shoot hoops for an hour. No. Every now and then they let you go grab your meal, but then you come right back. The only time you're out was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for 15 minutes to take a shower, or twice a week for a 5-minute phone call to your family. The sink was broken. The toilets were broken. It was the facility in and of itself was filthy. That's what solitary confinement was for me.
One other question about Trump and the trial. Do you think he wants to testify?
Well, I think he'd like you to believe that he would.
You think it would be a disaster?
Disaster. It would be worse than the deposition he gave at the E. Jean trial case, where he couldn't even recognize that E. Jean Carroll was not his ex-wife, Marla Maples. Donald does not know how to tell the truth. He's lied so many times on each of these aspects that he cannot keep track of the lies. And one lie begets another lie, which is easily impeachable. He would be putting himself into a perjury trap by taking the stand. During the 5 minutes that Donald was on the stand during the New York Attorney General case, when he went outside and he started attacking me, despite the gag order that existed by Judge Engoron, the judge was so angry that he had them put Trump on the witness stand. They swore Donald in, and he asked, who were you talking about when you went out there and started speaking? Because the attack was actually not on me. The attack was on the judge's law clerk, which there was a gag order on, to which Donald then replied, I was talking about Michael Cohen. And the judge says, no, you weren't. You were talking about the person that sits next to me. So he turns around and he goes, no, I was talking about Michael Cohen. And the judge acknowledged at that time that he did not believe Trump at all. In fact, he could have hit him with a perjury charge. He certainly could have sanctioned him and his attorneys, because they jumped in and they lie on his behalf too.
So you don't think he'd be a great witness is what you're saying?
I'm saying he'd be a horrible witness. You guys would all enjoy it, because it would give you so much to talk about. Saturday Night Live would pay Donald to get up on the witness stand. They wouldn't have to write anything for maybe the next 3-4 episodes.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying is also it would be good for the prosecution's case.
Putting Donald Trump on the witness stand is good for any case.
Brought to you by the Small Business Payments Alliance. According to a new survey, an overwhelming majority of small business owners oppose additional government regulations on the electronic payment system, as called for in the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. Don't let Durbin-Marshall pile new mandates on Main Street small businesses. Learn more at smallbusinesspaymentsalliance.com.
Give us a sense on this Thursday, Michael, on the eve of the trial that starts on Monday, just mentally where you are and how you're preparing for this.
Well, my preparation is really just looking over some of the old testimony that I had given. Remember, it goes back to 2018. So it's really just more a review. So my story has not changed. It's just very repetitive. Where do I stand today on all of this? Well, you know, interestingly enough, I'm not the defendant in this case. The defendant in this case is the former president, Donald J. Trump. So what does he do? He starts to attack. And despite the gag orders that are put on by the judges, he nevertheless continues to do what he wants. And that
you're part of the gag order in this case, right? Like it applies to you?
Yes. So he does exactly what he wants. He will say whatever he wants. He violates the gag order. And like a petulant child, there appears to be no repercussion. He legitimately just posted something calling me a sleazebag. And of course, he attacks Stormy Daniels as well. It's called witness intimidation and obstruction of justice. And so
that would be a violation of the gag order, right?
100%. And so I was just asked by a series of journalists what my response to Donald calling me a sleazebag is. And I responded back, knowing that I'm a witness in the case. Donald has clearly, once again, violated Judge Merchan's gag order. When all matters of fact fail, Donald turns to childish name-calling, hoping to prejudice the jury's opinion of a key witness, namely me. Regardless, I'll be seeing you very soon.
Will you be asking the court for sanctions and for Merchan to enforce his gag order, which does allow for sanctions?
I don't have the right to make that call. That call has to be made by the prosecutors, not by me. I am merely, and I want your listeners to understand this. I don't want to testify. I have already testified before the Mueller team. I've testified before seven congressional committees. I have testified to the New York Attorney General. I've been part of grand jury indictments. You know, now I'm supposed to, again, testify before the Manhattan DA case. I'm not asking to be a witness, let alone be referred to as a key witness. I am a non-party subpoenaed witness. My intention is to comply with this subpoena, though I would prefer not to.
Fair. Let me ask you about this. And first of all, do you want Merchan to enforce the gag order? Or I should have said, do you want Bragg to ask Merchan to enforce it after Trump attacked you?
Well, I think they should, specifically so as to ensure that the case, once it starts on Monday, operates in a respectful manner and one that does not place witnesses, myself included, in harm's way.
All right. I appreciate this. So you're ready to testify like Monday morning, but you just don't know yet when they're going to call you.
There's no chance in the world that I'm testifying on Monday. As you know, the process starts with what's called voir dire. That's where they're going to impanel the 12 jurors.
Oh, sorry.
With the two,
of course.
Right,
yeah.
With the two alternates. I assure you, as I am sitting here today, because, you know, I've had a lot of predictions that have come to fruition. My prediction is, we're looking at 3 weeks to a month to empanel the jury.
Wow.
Todd Blanche, Susan Necklis, they are going to pull out every stop that they can to try to demonstrate to the judge that they cannot get a fair jury, that they cannot get a fair trial here in New York. And that way, somewhere down the road, they're going to once again make another motion claiming that they need for Judge Merchan to be recused, that they need the venue to be changed because Donald is afforded under the Constitution the right to a fair trial. That's their next move. It will not work. You know, if I can say one more thing. So the other day,
of course,
my lawyer in this matter is Danya Perry. Danya happens to be this brilliant attorney who was the one successful in filing the habeas petition that got me released that went before Judge Alvin K. Hellerstein that determined it was retaliatory and had me released from the unconstitutional remand. Danya, as far as I can tell you, is certain that this will not happen in terms of the result of having this case moved. But
yeah,
let's say 30 days is what it will ultimately be before which the jury gets impaneled. And I'm not even expected to be one of the first witnesses. I'll probably be more like in baseball, cleanup. I'll be, you know, like a fourth or a fifth batter into it because they're going to keep me on that stand for as long as they possibly can, trying to discredit me. So again, that way they can use that to try to make a case during appeal why this case should not stand and have it overturned.
Got it. So you'll be late in the case. The fact that you'll be late in the case, is that also part of, does that suggest your sort of importance
that was my
to
opinion.
The case?
Yeah, but that's my opinion. I do not even know right now what day I will be appearing.
Got it. But
I also don't know how many days.
But your prediction is voir dire is going to take a while, and that's where they can drag things out.
Correct.
Let me ask you this. The jury questionnaire, Michael, it had a question in there that asks the jurors, have you ever listened to any podcasts by or read any books by by Michael Cohen? Suggesting that, you know, this is going to be a little bit of an issue. Do you ever regret your sort of media empire that you've built? Do you think it's complicated this case by being a strong critic of the former president?
Well, I appreciate you calling it an empire. I would hardly characterize it as that, though mea culpa turned over 300 million downloads since
I was going to say it's a New York Times bestselling book and your podcast is very successful.
Two New York Times bestselling books. Am I upset about the fact that I have done as much media as I have? Absolutely not. Because if it's not me who's speaking and trying to inform the country, not just Democrats, but Republicans, and most importantly, the independents, the undecideds. If it's not me, who is it going to be? The easiest thing, Ryan, for me to have done early on when all of this mishigas was going down in my life would have been to keep my mouth shut. Whatever happened, happened. I probably would have been the first person that Donald pardoned. And I'd probably be working for Fox Newsmax. I'd be the head of the RNC, probably with Lara Trump or something stupid like that. But I would be putting America's democracy. I'd be putting my children's future and your children's future and all of your listeners' family's future in jeopardy. And I wasn't going to do that. I can't tell you the number of inmates that, you know, fellow inmates with me that one would want to get into political conversation. I was like, listen, there's no reason to talk about it. It's not going to change anything. You have your opinions. I have mine. They're never going to intersect. So let's just run parallel. You run yours. I'll run mine. But they would say to me all the time, I just say it to you as a friend. Why didn't you just keep your fucking mouth shut? You'd be the first one pardoned. You would be working right now, making millions of dollars with the Republican Party. Instead, you keep fighting him. Remember, I was fighting him as an inmate from Otisville.
Do you ever?
It's like it's a modern day David versus Goliath story. And very similar to the biblical story, David, clearly the smaller of the two, appears to be slaying the giant because Donald Trump is a giant.
In the back of your mind, do you ever think, man, you know what? This really wasn't worth it. This you paid too high a price, and that gig as on Fox News or head of the RNC might have been a better path.
Listen, do I think about it? I think about everything. I think about the day that Donald asked me to come to work for him. I didn't need to work for him. I was semi-retired. I was 39. I was set. I got lucky early on. I was finally getting a chance to enjoy time with my wife, my children. Unfortunately, I had just come off of a terrible health issue that almost took my life. And so being sort of sedate, I was looking for something that would have, you know, given me some activity that would spark my entrepreneurial spirit again. And I like to be busy. And Donald, when he made that offer to me, fit that exact set of parameters. I mean, he made
What year was
me,
that?
He made me, that was 2007. He made me one of the three members of the board of Miss Universe. It was Donald, Alan Weisselberg, and me. That's not the greatest of company. I was co-president of Trump Production. He had the number one TV show at the time. I was working on real estate projects. I was given this great responsibility. I was personal attorney to Donald J. Trump. And he was not the Donald Trump that you see today. I often say this, that Donald today is the worst version of himself imaginable.
How do you explain that?
And he is. He has exceeded even what anybody thought would be the worst version of himself.
How do you explain that transition? What do you think has made him more of a caricature of himself in terms of the way that you're describing him?
Power. The old adage, absolute power corrupts absolutely. That should be written on his epitaph one day.
You've talked about and written that it was Jared Kushner and Don Jr. that convinced Trump to throw you under the bus.
That information was provided to a gentleman who was helping me accumulate the information for my second book called Revenge, How Donald Trump Weaponized the United States Department of Justice Against His Critics.
What would have happened if he hadn't listened, if he hadn't thrown you under the bus?
Chances are he may not be in the position that he's in right now.
Why is that?
Because I may not have come clean. I may not have provided the information. I may not have been able to emotionally break away from the cult and acknowledge, despite the ongoing continuous harassment from my wife, my daughter, and my son, that you need to snap out of this, that your loyalty belongs to us and the country. And that's when I had said to George Stephanopoulos on that interview that after quite a bit of reflection, I have to say that my loyalty belongs to my wife, my daughter, my son, and my country, and that I will not allow Donald to have history remember me as the villain of his story.
Michael, you and Stormy Daniels have struck up an unlikely friendship after all you went through. And I know that on one of that she's done tarot card readings for you. Did she do a tarot card reading about this case? And can you tell us what it said about the outcome of the trial?
Well, she did do a tarot card reading for me when she was on my Mea Culpa podcast, the second time that she was on. I don't specifically remember all of the things that she said, but she turned around and she said that the cards show Donald will be held accountable.
Okay, we just don't know how. We just don't know how. Do you ever think that maybe these legal cases were a mistake? and they just have strengthened him, and they made it impossible for Republicans to beat him in the primary, and that the law just isn't set up for giving accountability to someone like him, and it has to happen at the ballot box. I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just wondering if you've ever, you know, thought that watching the primaries, the way that they turned out.
Well, one thing Donald certainly has done is he's tapped into white privilege. He's tapped into people's grievances, whether it's because they feel disconnected from the process or the country, whatever their own personal issues are. Donald has figured out how to tap into those grievances. And as a result, he absolutely controls a significant portion of the Republican Party, whether it's 40%, 50%. I'll even go so far and give him even more people and say 60%. But just because you're able to control that percentage, that will give you the opportunity to be the nominee. But under no circumstances does it give you even a shot at winning the general election. So is Donald's running, is Donald's behavior, is Donald's taking of the Republican Party bad for the Republican Party, one of our two political parties in this country? It's absolutely catastrophic for them.
Michael, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. And we have a tradition on this show. Our last guest asks a question for the next guest, and they don't know who you were going to be. And then you come up with a question for our next guest. And so it's a little strange to end with this, but this is a little bit of an abrupt transition. But our last guest was Anna Hokemer, who is running the ballot initiative in Florida to put abortion rights into the Florida Constitution. And I'm going to ask you two of these, though, because the question we had for her may be more up your alley. But Anna's first question is, what do you think America should do about TikTok? Think about that for a second. But then the question we had for Anna that she didn't really have.
Well, I'm actually on TikTok.
All right. So tell us about that. But then I also want to hear who you think Donald Trump will pick as his VP. That was the question for her that she punted. So you get two this week. And then I want you to give one for our next guest.
Sure. Well, I'm actually on TikTok. I have like a 10 p.m. show that I do nightly.
Really? I didn't know that. All right. I'll have to watch.
Right. I don't sleep well. I've never slept well. I go to sleep very late and I wake up very, very early. Generally, it's like 12 to 4 is my sleep pattern. So at 10 o'clock, I get bored. I pretty much watched everything on streaming services that is decent to watch. So I started doing this TikTok, and I have every night I basically get 1 million likes. We have 70, 80,000 people joining us each night. It's become a lot of fun. I answer questions. So I believe that TikTok is a very important platform where young generation, the Gen Zers, so to speak, obtain information. So I think it's extremely important. And I do not ascribe to the attacks on TikTok U.S. that they're, so what? Even if hypothetically they're following my location, so does every other app that you're on, whether it's Waze all the way to Facebook and Google. All right. It makes no difference. They're all data mining your information because that's where they make the bulk of their money.
As it relates
to who's Donald going to pick as a VP, guaranteed it'll be a woman, because he is right now so deep down into the dumpster when it comes to women, other than the MAGA women faithful, that he needs to show that he's not the sexist misogynist that he is. And I think if he could find a woman of color, that would be better, but he won't do it. I see somebody like a Nancy Mace or maybe even somebody like, it would have been this woman, maybe Britt, the one that
Katie Britt, yeah. The response to the State of the Union.
Because of their looks. You see, Donald is...
That's important to Donald Trump?
Very, very. He is a... He believes in optics. It's almost like why he would walk and he'd have Hope Hicks, for example, right by his side, shoulder to shoulder. Why he had Kayleigh McEnany, right? Why he has the folks around him that he does. He's very transactional. He believes that everyone is sort of as mentally corrupt as he is, and he's visual. So like with The Apprentice, him coming off the helicopter with 30 beautiful women following behind him, he thinks it makes him look bigger and more important to the rest of the world than he is. So I do believe it'll be a woman. I believe that in his mind, he will consider her to be attractive. He also needs somebody who will not outshine him. That's why somebody like a Nikki Haley could never be a choice. She's too strong a person, and she would suck up some of his oxygen in the room. And for Donald, owning all the oxygen in the room is what he constantly needs. It's what keeps him going.
Got it. All right, last thing. Give us a question for our next guest, Michael.
For your next guest.
You don't know who it's going to be, so that's part of the fun here. It doesn't have to be a specific thing. It could be a general thing. Yeah.
All right. Why do you think that Merrick Garland failed to move the January 6th and other cases more expeditiously so as to ensure that the cases would not interfere with the unwritten rule of 90 days before an election?
Good question.
I aim to please, Ryan.
Do you have a view on that, by the way?
What's that?
Do you personally have a view on that, by the way?
I do, but I'm going to keep it to myself because we're going to leave it for the next guest.
Michael, thank you so much for doing this. I'll stay in touch and, good luck when you actually do take the stand.
Yep. Thank you, my friend. I'll speak to you soon.
And that's our show. Our producer is Kara Tabor. Our senior producer is Alex Keeney. I'm Ryan Lizza, host and executive producer of Deep Dive. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Please tell us what you think about the show or who you'd like to hear on Deep Dive. You can email me at rlizza@politico.com. And please subscribe to Playbook Deep Dive wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be right back.